Welcome to episode 3 of our 4-part series on discovering spiritual disciplines. This, along with the next episode, will be on the discipline of silence and solitude. We're going to take a journey over these next 2 episodes. A journey inward that impacts many other spiritual disciplines or practices, including prayer, self-examination, and fasting. This is a different kind of journey than you've ever taken before. There's no final destination. Others, even family members, are not invited. You'll be retreating from outside and all too familiar sounds. Phones ringing, music playing, TVs blaring, and you won't be speaking to anyone. You'll be alone in solitude and silence. Sound inviting? Well, many Christians have taken this journey, and through it, they've experienced spiritual renewal, a deeper desire to be in God's loving presence, to become utterly vulnerable and surrender themselves to God, to be attuned to that little voice inside that guides you to live your life as Jesus would if he were you living today. In this episode, I'll provide a brief history of Christian contemplative silence and solitude that I hope will offer context for this discipline. In the next episode, I'll delve into this discipline and why it is so important to our spiritual growth, particularly today. There are over 80 references to solitude and silence in both the Old and New Testaments, many in the Book of Psalms. Jesus clearly understood the spiritual value of solitude. In the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, before he began his public ministry, he withdrew for 40 days into the desert wilderness to fast and pray in solitude. When he had heard that John the Baptist had been put in prison, Jesus withdrew by boat to a solitary place. Before the miracle of the feeding of 5,000, we find that Jesus withdrew with his disciples to a desolate place to rest. The spiritual discipline of silence and solitude as we know it today likely began with the desert fathers and mothers, many of whom fled the desert in the 3rd century AD, so they could practice what they felt was authentic Christianity. The first Christian monks. The rise of monasticism more or less coincided with Christianity being embraced by the Emperor Constantine. This led to a large increase in the number of people openly professing the faith, but in fact were Christians in name only. Most Neophyte Christians would go on living life as they had been doing so before, finding themselves much at home in the world. There were a few Christians, however, that found they couldn't go on living this way. They were serious about living renewed lives in Jesus and fled to the Egyptian desert to be in solitude and think through what it really meant to be a Christian and a follower of Christ. A fair question to ask is, why would someone choose to abandon everything to live a life of solitude and silence in the desert? A good answer to this question comes from someone who many consider the father of all monasticism and Christianity, St. Anthony the Great. Visiting the local church in his hometown of Colma, Egypt, shortly after his parents' death, he was already thinking about how the apostles abandoned their normal way of life to follow Jesus. Then he heard the gospel being read where Jesus tells a rich man, "If you want to be perfect, go sell all you have and give to the poor. Then come and follow me." Anthony was so inspired by what he heard that he promptly divested himself of all of his possessions, including a large inheritance left by his parents, and went off to live a solitary life in the desert, immersing himself in Christian asceticism. John Cassian followed after Anthony, He went from Rome to study the Desert Fathers around 380 AD. And what he learned after spending over 20 years in the desert, he brought to Gaul, now France, where he set up several cenobitic, meaning a living in community, monasteries. On his return from the desert to Gaul, Cassian spent almost 3 years in complete solitude in Bethlehem. His two key works, Institutes of Monastic Life and Conferences of the Desert Fathers, did much to advance the development of monasticism, and he's considered by many to be the bridge between Eastern and Western monasticism. Saint Benedict of Nursia drew on the writings of John Cassian in his Rule for Monks, written in 516 AD, now commonly referred to as the Rule of Saint Benedict. It is a book of precepts for monks living in community, which includes the essential element of silence. Although, against common belief, the order does not call for a vow of silence, still, modern Benedictine monks like to point out that the first word in the rule is, listen. The entire sentence of the rule is, listen carefully, my son, to the master's instructions, and attend to them with the ear of your heart. The rule's impact on Christendom worldwide cannot be overstated. Even in the secular world as far back as Charlemagne, its instruction and wisdom was praised and highly valued. By the Middle Ages, the practice of solitude was not so much taught, but largely exemplified in highly transformed people like St. Bernard of Clairvaux, St. Hildegard, and Julian of Norwich. The spiritual guide, The Cloud of Unknowing, by an unknown English author, was written during this time. At its essence, it's a guide on contemplative prayer that asks the reader to be courageous enough to surrender one's mind and ego to the realm of unknowing, at which point one may begin to glimpse the nature of God. The Cloud of Unknowing remains an important work in contemplative practice today. Unfortunately, the discipline of solitude and silence was largely lost after the tribal fights of the Reformation and the Enlightenment. Silence did not allow us to prove anything, and so was no longer found to be attractive. Almost incredibly, the discipline remained in the background of Christianity until the middle of the 20th century, when Father Thomas Merton, a Trappist monk, poet, and scholar, almost single-handedly pulled back the veil and reintroduced contemplative silence and solitude to a Catholic Church that no longer understood it, and to a Protestant Church that, for the most part, was never taught this spiritual discipline at all. The young Merton was a restless spiritual seeker, earnestly trying to discern the path God wanted him to follow. With the help and guidance of a cadre of Catholic priests, whom he respected and trusted, he made the life-changing decision in December of 1941 to become a priest and live a monastic life at the Abbey of Gethsemane in Kentucky. It was the silence and solitude that drew Merton in. Merton loved his life of silence, and he loved writing, but for some time he felt conflicted about doing both. But Abbot Frederick Dunn saw that Merton had both a gifted intellect and a talent for writing and encouraged him with assignments and even to publish his work. With some irony, his autobiographical Seven-Story Mountain, first published in 1948, became one of the best-selling books in the U.S. Having studied the Desert Fathers and other Christian mystics as part of his monastic vocation, Merton had a deep understanding of what it was those men and women sought and experienced in their seeking, and found parallels in practices of some Eastern religions. And while he was not interested in what these religions had to offer as doctrines and institutions, he was deeply interested in what these religions said of the deepening of our spiritual experience, particularly silence and solitude. Contemplative silence and solitude is now practiced worldwide, thanks to people like Thomas Merton, Father Richard Rohr, founder of the Center for Action and Contemplation, Father Thomas Keating, founder of the Contemplative Prayer Movement, and Reverend Dr. Cynthia Bourgeau, an Episcopal priest, noted author, and evangelist for recovering the Christian contemplation and wisdom path. This was a very brief historical overview of the Christian discipline of silence and solitude. It has transformed an untold number of lives, and in turn, has changed the world. In closing today's session, let's enter into a meditation to be with God. Settle into a comfortable position and close your eyes. Take a few deep breaths to begin to calm your body and your mind. As your breath returns to normal again, release any tension in your body, in your feet and legs, in your abdominal area and your chest, in your hands and arms, in your neck and jaw. As you calm and quiet your soul, tell God what it is that you need today. Notice how you are feeling. If you're feeling tired, allow yourself to do something that feels restful. Take a nap, sit quietly listening to music, sit basking in the sunlight of a glorious day. Give yourself all the time you need to begin to restore yourself. If you choose to rest, be conscious that you're doing so at the invitation of God. If you do feel rested and your soul is quieted, ask yourself the following questions to know what is true about you these days. What is your physical condition lately? Are you struggling or feeling unmotivated? Energized? Satisfied with your overall health and fitness? Are you eating well or not? What concerns have been occupying your thoughts these days? What joys or successes are you celebrating? Where do you hurt physically and emotionally? Invite God to be with you in this place, whatever you are experiencing. As we bring this meditation to a close, thank God for His loving presence being with you, especially in times of silence and solitude. Take a few long, deep breaths. Open your eyes and move gently back to this present moment. This ends episode 3 of Discovering Spiritual Disciplines. In our final episode, we'll continue our journey into silence and solitude deepening our understanding of this spiritual discipline and its relevance to our spiritual growth today. Until then, may the peace that surpasses understanding be with you.